Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is a special Sound Ideas broadcast of a town hall meeting with U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. It took place April 23rd in the Hanson Student Center at Illinois Wesleyan University. Hundreds attended. Duckworth took questions from a variety of Central Illinois residents on many issues. Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner moderated this session. The first question came from retired Illinois State University political science professor Bob Bradley.
My question deals with a statement that was made by President Trump a couple days ago, where he was talking about that he may slash or eliminate funding for Amtrak along the Midwest routes. And for those of you who know, Amtrak is a pretty key thing in this area. So I was wondering if, in fact, he does that, what are you in the Senate going to do to oppose that?
Well, Bob, I don't think that people outside of the Midwest understand the great importance of Amtrak, that Amtrak plays. And I used to ride that Amtrak route all the time when I worked in Springfield. Back then, I think the state rate fare was like $18 one way, going from Chicago down. I lived in Chatham for a couple of years when I worked at the state of Illinois. Well, if he does, I'm going to oppose him every step of the way. The budget that the president put out, a proposed budget for 2018, is really the Heritage Foundation's budget. If you look at it, it's pretty much exactly the same as the proposed budget for the Heritage Foundation, and it slashes everything. And this proposed cut to Amtrak is yet another broken promise, unfortunately, from this administration that's in less than 100 days broken so many. He actually promised to put money into infrastructure development, not to cut infrastructure development. And I get it on Amtrak, and I'll be there. In fact, I made sure I was on, that I am on the appropriate committees to fight any type of cuts to rail travel especially. So I sit on the transportation committee, but I'm also on public works committee as well. So anything to do with infrastructure, road, rail, airports, waterways of the United States, trying to get high-speed internet to rural communities, clean water, all of that, I will be working on as a key part of what I do in the Senate. So I'm waiting to see what he does, but if he tries to fight it, I'll fight back every step of the way. Thank you.
Next is Kay Brook from Normal.
Hi, Kay.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good. I'm very concerned about what the president has done already in the first 100 years to our environment.
It feels like 100 years.
Oh, it does. Excuse me.
Freudian slip.
Well, it does. First 100 days.
Let me tell you, as someone who's been there, it feels like 100 years.
Okay. He's slashed so many of the various safeguards for pollution and for the environment and for those kinds of areas. And now I'm concerned about how long it's going to take to undo what he's done, and what can we do as citizens to help undo these I don't even know what to call them.
Right.
These passage things that he's done, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I don't think what he's done is permanent yet. I think he's well on his way. The latest rumor is that he plans to shut down the EPA office for the Midwest region, which would take care of the entire Midwest. By the way, the EPA office for the Midwest region was the first office to raise the flag on the lead that was being found in the water supply in Flint, Michigan. He also zeroes out funding for the Great Lakes Water Restoration Initiative, which is cleaning up the polluted sites all along the Great Lakes, from New York through Illinois, through Wisconsin and Michigan. And these moves affect both Republican districts and Democratic districts. And so what I plan on doing is reaching out as much as I can across the aisle to my colleagues all across the Midwest, especially to talk about these issues. I oppose Mr. Pruitt. I actually took to the floor of the Senate at 2 a.m. and held the floor to oppose his nomination. Let me tell you, I want this administration to succeed, because if it succeeds, the American people succeeds. If they would do for the American people and put the needs of the American people in front of their own personal gain, financial gain, in front of their own, you know, the political ideology coming out of, you know, Steve Bannon and Breitbart News and all that, if they would actually just put the well-being of the American people first, then I think we would do, you know, we need a huge infrastructure improvement bill. If they would just keep that promise, that would be great. If they could get rid of duplicative bureaucracies, I've worked on those things, that would be great. But to come in and say that you are going to cut clean water programs from our kids, that you're going to remove the entire EPA office out of the Midwest region, that's pretty scary. And then to go after transportation, it's going to make us less competitive on an international scale than it already is. I think people think of the strength of this nation, you know, as if it's all tanks and guns and helicopters. And let me tell you, I find helicopters sexy. You know, and I've ridden in tanks and fired guns. But that's not the only strength of our nation. The strength of our nation also rests in a good public education system so that we have the people who can actually qualify to go fly those helicopters, right? The current budget proposed by the president will cut nutritional programs from the Farm Bill and the Department of Agriculture. You know, one of the reasons that food stamps was created was because of the high number of malnourished recruits who were being drafted to go fight in World War II. And we started food stamps to combat that problem. And now we're back to an administration that wants to look to cut those programs. And the EPA, here's a statistic that will shock you. The Military Officers of America Association did a study, and they found that 71% of young people in this country who are of military age do not qualify to serve in the military. 71% of the pool of individuals who should be able to serve do not qualify to serve for one of many things. Drug problems with the opioid epidemic and the like, some with felony conviction, a huge percentage because they cannot pass the basic math and science test to pass to become a private in the Army. Medical diagnoses such as childhood asthma and medication for ADHD, a lot of these are linked to pollutants in the environment. You know, if we roll back the Clean Power Plan, we're going to increase the amount of childhood asthma that will occur in this country. So to roll back on these things, to roll back on the EPA, actually weakens our military. And I don't care how much money that they propose in their budget to put in through the Department of Defense. If you don't have the people, then you don't. Then you have a hollow military. If you don't have a country that has the infrastructure set up that can compete on a global scale, we'll never be able to get our goods to market the way our competitors do, and we won't have the economy to support that great military. So it's very short-sighted to make the cuts the president is cutting. We'll fight them every step of the way again, but this is where those of you who've been making phone calls and sending emails and sending faxes and going on marches, thank you for doing that, because you are truly making a difference. It was because of you that the movement of the women's marchers and people who march, that when the Muslim ban came out, people spontaneously went to the airports and protested. It was the grassroots movement that made all the difference. And thank you, and keep doing it. Send those emails, send those letters, make those phone calls, show up at those town halls, not just to the people you don't agree with, but even to me. Send them to me, because I want to be able to stand on the floor of the Senate and say, let me tell you something. I'm holding the floor against Mr. Pruitt to be Secretary of EPA, because I've heard from 200,000 of my constituents. They don't want him. They think it's bad that you want to cut the EPA and ruin the environment. So says to me as well. I welcome every one of them.
This is a special Sound Ideas broadcast on GLT. I'm Charlie Schlenker. You're listening to Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, taking questions from the audience at Illinois Wesleyan University.
Hi, thank you for coming today. I'm a parent of two children adopted from Guatemala. My daughter was abandoned on the streets at birth. My son ran away from his abusive parent and they never came to show up for him until about 2 weeks later, and the dad was high, so the police did not release him to them. My daughter has cognitive impairment, and in her first 3 years with us, she required twice weekly, speech therapy, occupational therapy, and physical therapy. Our son has struggled with mental health issues for a number of years, and I'm concerned about the changes that are being proposed even now to the Affordable Care Act, because for those of you who have not had extreme medical bills, because I tracked it, we traditionally paid about $25,000 a year in premiums and out-of-pocket and co-insurance for our children for a number of years. A couple of years ago, our son was finally convinced to go into drug rehab. Because we now work for employers, we had two insurance policies. We didn't pay a dime for that. And I remember the day when mental health was treated as a separate category and was not given enough care. But I'm concerned about the pushing it down to the states and the race to the bottom that would entail, because right now, as a special need parent, our plans about where we retire, where we live, are tied up with, let's look at the benefits in the state. Can we get our child onto a waiting list for services as it is in the current conditions? And I don't want this country to be divided up into municipalities and kingdoms where everybody is holding on to what they have as theirs and not being willing to recognize the abundance that we have and that there's enough to go around if everybody will simply share.
Thank you. Thank you. What the Republicans, what Speaker Ryan, what President Trump promised with the repeal of the ACA was that they were going to replace it with something better. So far, I haven't seen anything better in any of their proposals. The proposal that came forward would actually decrease access for men ages 50 to 65. You would actually lose and not get as much coverage. There are a couple of key words, and when you hear about the talk about changing the Affordable Care Act, there's a couple of key words that are really red herrings, and one of them is access. They will say they will guarantee access for people with pre-existing conditions, and we all pretty much have pre-existing conditions. If you don't, then you're, you know, I don't know what, you're not even an Olympic athlete, because most of them have pre-existing conditions as well from training so hard. They'll say, but we don't take away your access. What they're going to do is take people with pre-existing conditions and allow insurance companies to move you into a high-risk pool so that you will still have access to health insurance. It would just cost more. It's like me being able to walk into a Bentley dealership and say, oh, you have access to buying a Bentley. No, I don't. No, I don't. I'm not going to do that. You know, and say, if your health insurance costs $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year, you don't really have access. It exists, but you don't really have access. So watch out for that red herring, because by allowing insurance to move people into separate pools basically takes away your health insurance, because you'll never be able to afford it. I remember before the Affordable Care Act, if you lost your job and you had COBRA, you get that letter that says, hey, all right, you've lost your job, your health insurance going away, here's COBRA at the affordable price of $1,000 a month, you know? And I was making $800 a month when I, you know, had, that doesn't marry up. I will work to fix the ACA. There are problems with it. I'm willing to work to fix it. I'm not willing to work to lower what we have, because it's already less than every other developed nation on the face of the earth. Send those messages. It's already less. So I'm not going to let you lower the standards. If you want to fix the problems, I'll show up and I'll work with you to fix the problems. I voted to get rid of the medical device tax. And I did that because I talked to hospital associations all across Illinois, and they made it clear that the medical device tax as part of the ACA was just going to be passing those tax dollars onto the patients who come to the hospitals. And I realized that was a flawed system, so I voted against it. I'm willing to do that, but I'm not willing to put people out there without health insurance. We're the leader of the free world. Why can't all folks have health insurance? The other red herring is when they say, well, you should be able to buy insurance across state lines. And this speaks exactly to what Karen was talking about. You see, because some states have lower standards than other, so health insurance that's from a state that has less requirements, if they can sell across state lines, that means that they can come and sell plans here that don't meet the Illinois standards. For example, we have prosthetics parity in Illinois that requires insurers to provide, basically pay for your prosthetics so that you can actually get up and walk if you have the ability to walk. In some states, they don't have that, and they just give people who would be walking just a wheelchair, because a $1,000 wheelchair is far cheaper than a $30,000 pair of legs.
Sandy Alley from Seneca.
Hello.
Hi, Sandy. How are you?
Good. Okay, it seems that everything President Trump does seems to benefit the Trump holdings financially, and I am extremely concerned about the conflicts of interest there appears to be with the Trump family. And I want to know, if Congress is planning to work on tax reform, Republicans seem to be turning a blind eye to this issue. What can Democrats do to make sure that what is going on is not going to benefit specifically the Trump holdings?
So you should know that there are already lawsuits filed for the violations of the Emoluments Clause. I'll give you an example of how the Trump family and the president himself is personally benefiting from his decisions. Something as simple as his weekly trips to Mar-a-Lago. There are about $3 million for 48 hours he spends down there. You, the taxpayers, are actually footing the bill, and that money goes to Mar-a-Lago. And so that organization is making money and a profit, because we have to pay for the Secret Service agents, we got to pay for their rooms, we got to pay for their meals and all that, the catering, all of that goes into Mar-a-Lago. It was just recently revealed that the president has not actually set up a system where he's disconnected himself from the trust with all of his holdings, and he can in fact continue to draw that money. So by deciding to go to Mar-a-Lago, he's actually enriching himself because he still has ownership and he's still able to pull money out of that organization, out of that business. That's just one example. The Chinese government just gave him several copyrights that for some trade copyrights that he applied for before he became president, and he hadn't gotten them, and suddenly now he magically has gotten them. So folks are looking into that, and I know that there are lawsuits that have been filed, and it's the kind of thing that it's so serious that we need to move forward steadily with that, whether it is the president, whether it's me, whether it's anybody else. If you are a public servant, you should not be able to enrich yourself from the decisions you make as a public servant, and that applies, to the lowest ranking Marine or airman or sailor, and the lowest ranking civil servant in government. It should apply to the president and his family as well. So we're going to keep working on it, but it's not the kind of thing that you can go out there and just start making lots of accusations. It's too serious an issue to move forward haphazardly.
Thank you very much. The next four. Alita Diggins from Normal, Aaron Seligson from Peoria, Srinivasa from Bloomington, and Hannah Alley from Seneca. So we'll start with Alita. Alita? Yeah.
I'm right here.
Oh, there you are.
Hi. I'm so pleased to have you down here and have a chance to even address you. I am a co-leader of a book group called the Language Matters Group with the Voices of Reason down here. And we've been studying the work of George Lakoff as one person, but there are others, Jonathan Haidt and Arlie Hochschild. And I was wondering whether you're familiar with their work. It has to do with communication, psychology, sociology, and bridging the cultural gap, which there are so many who are pushing us to have a culture war, and there are so many that are afraid on both sides of the other side. We feel like it's really important for the future of bipartisanship and democracy in our country to be aware of the new research and work that's being done, and the strategies for communication to increase bipartisanship. Have you heard of these people? And would, if you're interested, I mean, you're extremely articulate already and you know what you're doing, but we would be more than happy to send you briefings, little short ones, if you would, or your staffers.
So I've not heard of these particular works. I certainly am interested, and please feel free to send me anything you want me to take a look at and pay attention to. In a small way, I've tried to address the issues that you're talking about ever since I was first elected. When I was elected to Congress, the congressional district that I was elected to, 60% of it was Henry Hyde's district for 42 years. And I was Democrat represented to represent this geographic area that had a fairly conservative representative for almost a half a century. And I've always told people this about how I approach my job. I start every day assuming that the people I disagree with in Congress, whether it is the president, folks from my party, from the other party, I assume that they love this country as much as I do. I assume, as much as we may have absolutely opposite views on an issue like eliminating the EPA or women's reproductive rights, I assume, as hard as it can be sometimes, I will start by assuming that they love this country as much as I do and try to work from there and find a way to work together. I did not vote for Mr. Trump. I don't think he is qualified to be president, but he is president. He is the president. And so I'll go back to him with the first thing that I do. I hope he succeeds because he's the president of the United States of America, of the country that I love more than my own life. And so I want him to be successful. So that's why I hope that he comes forward with something like an infrastructure bill that we can work on in a bipartisan way. And I think infrastructure is a great example of what you're talking about, because a road does not know philosophical boundaries and political priorities. A road only knows the surface of the earth, and so roads have to go from Democratic districts to Republican districts. They have to go to small farms as well as urban centers, and so it is important that we invest in that, and I think that's a place where we can work together. And so I will try as hard as I can. It's why I've been doing town halls in congressional districts represented by Republicans, because I feel like people in Chicago see me all the time, and they're largely Democratic. I want to make sure that I get out and talk to folks. I was just in Collinsville earlier this week talking to folks, and coal miners came and talked to me, and aired their concerns, and so. I'll try to use the best language I can to meet people in a non-confrontational way. Doesn't mean I'm not going to stand up to them. It just means I'm going to start off by saying, okay, I'm going to assume you love Illinois and you love this country as much as I do. Now explain to me why getting rid of the EPA is good for the people of Illinois.
Yeah. It's easy to work together on things like roads where there aren't philosophical differences as much. But how do we come together and work, reach across the aisle on something like healthcare, where Democrats acknowledge that it needs to be fixed, Republicans say that it needs to be fixed? If everyone thinks it needs to be fixed, how do we reach across the aisle and try to fix it together?
Thank you. I think my example of the medical device tax is a good example. Most Democrats didn't vote for that. I did. And it takes some of us to, you don't always have to be the one person who reaches across out every single time, but there's room for those of us in the middle. I'm very progressive when it comes to my social values, but I'm also, as someone who formerly represented a fairly conservative district, someone who is much more moderate on some of these issues, and I realized that I would rather the Affordable Care Act be saved and continue, as flawed as it was, and work to fix it than to get rid of it completely. And so I think that's where moderate Democrats and moderate Republicans should work harder to come together. And I think this is where the protesters who've shown up at town halls for the moderate Republicans and made it clear that you did not support the repeal and a really bad proposed replacement of ACA is making all the difference. Because I think that proposed replacement failed not because of the Tea Partiers, It failed because the moderate Republicans heard from their voters and said, I can't vote for this. My voters have made it clear that they want to keep the Affordable Care Act instead of this replacement. And that's where you find compromise, and that's where you find a place to work together and to move forward. And so this is where the voice of the people, the grassroots movement, really does make a difference. And I think we're really seeing that now in these last several months, where you have made a difference and you continue to make a difference. And I think the EPA is another great example. People want clean drinking water, and no matter where they live in this country, and to think that you're going to just gut clean drinking water programs is something that's going to affect Republicans as well. And so, you know, sometimes it's hard. I mean, I got criticism from my friends who are far more, you know, on the progressive wing of the Democratic Party for voting to get rid of the medical device tax. I get criticized by, you know, folks for saying that I don't think that we can get to a single payer system as the next step, but maybe what we should work towards is a public option in the exchange. Yes, you know, ideally you'd like to get to somewhere else, but maybe the way to get there is somewhere in the middle as well. And that opens you up. That opens you up to criticism from both sides. But this is why you elected me to be in office, because it's not an easy job, but it's a really rewarding job. And you know, as we used to say in the Army, I got to man up. Man up and do the job.
That's U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, an Illinois Democrat, appearing in a town hall meeting at Illinois Wesleyan University on April 23rd. This is a Sound Ideas broadcast of that forum. You can make a contribution to GLT at WGLT.org.
Spinavasa. Oh, Srinivasa. Okay.
Dear Senator Tammy Duckworth and all the attendants, good afternoon. Thank you for your service to the nation and also for serving as a senator. I came here in 2006 and completed master's in STEM program. I'm a legal, documented, tax-paying, high-skilled applicant and currently waiting for my green card since last 10 years. Some research studies tells me that I have to wait another 20 to 40 years for the same. The current USA immigration systems allocate the same number of green cards to all countries irrespective of its size or number of applicants. If the rules do not change, a green card applicant from countries like Somalia, Pakistan, Nepal, Nigeria, etc., who is not even born today, will get his green card before me. These affect all Indian-born doctors, engineers, scientists, even with advanced degrees, who are stuck in such decades-long green card backlog. The worst part of this backlog, that during this wait period of 20 to 70 years, if I were to lose my job, even once, I have to sell my house, my cars, all my belongings, and leave the country in 30 days, along with my US-born kids, who are US citizens. Do you think it's fair to me or my family where we are being discriminated just because of our country of birth? And would you co-sponsor the bills such as S-281, House version of the bill is H-392, with 173 plus co-sponsors, which aims to bring fairness in green card allocation. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for your question. Our immigration system is broken. We need comprehensive immigration reform. There are individual bills like the one that you mentioned that fix a particular problem. And I will take a look at that. The problem that we have is we need to fix it as a system and not just one thing here and one thing there. Absolutely. We had a comprehensive immigration reform bill that was not perfect, but about 80% there, that passed the Senate, would have passed out of the House of Representatives, but sat there because the Republicans would not allow it to come up for a vote, because it would take Democratic votes to pass. It had enough votes. It had all the Democrats, and it had 30 Republicans, I believe, who said they would vote for it, and it would have passed. And they let that bill die. They let that bill die, and it was to the negative, it was to the detriment of our nation to have let that bill die. I think we need comprehensive immigration reform that would fix your problem along with all of the other issues that come up as well. You know, here's my philosophy when it comes to immigration reform. Whatever we do, it has to have three guiding principles. It's got to be practical. So it's got to be something that you can do, right? a giant wall paid for by Mexico? Not very practical. Finding 12 million undocumented people and deporting them? Not very practical. So it's got to be something that can be achieved. It's got to be something that is fair. And by fair, I mean for those who are here undocumented, they should pay fees and fines and penalties and go to the end of the line of that pathway to citizenship. It shouldn't be some outrageous amount that no one could ever afford, but it should be something, maybe it's prorated, something that it's fair. Because there are people who wait willingly for 10, 20, 30, 40 years who do it the correct way and are treated unfairly as opposed to folks who cheat the system to get in. So it's got to be fair, but it also has to be humane. It has to be humane. We, after all, and so, you know, separating families is not humane. I voted against, I can't think of her name. Okay, the Deputy Secretary for Homeland Security, who was just confirmed. I voted against her because she actually said she would not rule out separating nursing mothers from babies in detention because it would. She said, "Well, it would be a good deterrent." It's not humane. That's not who we are as a nation. I nursed my baby girl for 13 months. Well, two of those unwillingly on her part. 'cause I just, 46-year-old mom, I wasn't ready to let go. And then she was like, enough, mom. So really like 10 months and 2 months of her like not really wanting to be nursed anymore. But anyway, I can't imagine having my baby ripped from me as I'm trying to make a better life for her, as I'm putting everything on the line. So it's gotta be practical, fair, and humane. I will look at the particular bills you're talking about, but I think it's bigger than those particular issues. I think we need a guest worker program so people can come and work, and if they want to go home, they can, but at least they have some legal status when they're here so that they're not exploited, so that they have protection under the law, all of those things. And it passed out of the Senate once, and we need to keep working on it, and I need you guys to speak up.
Thank you very much. Hannah Alley, again, from Seneca.
Hi.
You kind of touched on this earlier. It's about healthcare. But I, as a woman, when I was 18 years old, went to my doctor and said to him, I'd like to get on birth control because I am having problems. And he said to me, no, you don't really need that. So I went to Planned Parenthood and they took care of me. And so with healthcare being in the news and everybody wanting to defund Planned Parenthood, that puts millions of women like me who need their services because I can't get them anywhere else on the street without access to healthcare that saves lives and helps people. Mm-hmm. So what can we do as Democrats, as citizens, to protect things that help underprivileged people or keep healthcare, because being a woman should not be a pre-existing condition.
Thank you. Well, we've got all sorts of good things going on right now, don't we? So, look, I am pro-choice. I know that decision is, I feel strongly that is between you, your religious tradition, and your family and your healthcare provider. That is your personal decision. The choice aside, the vast majority of the work that Planned Parenthood does, for which it gets federal funding, remember, under the Hyde Amendment, no federal dollars can go for abortion, so there are no federal dollars going to Planned Parenthood for abortions anyway. All the federal dollars that go to Planned Parenthood under the Medicaid system is really for things like family planning, cancer screening, STD screening. When I was in college and I needed to get I had a job on campus, but then I needed to get a second job, I wanted to be a waitress, I had to get a health screening, and I couldn't afford to go anywhere except for Planned Parenthood. And they took me in and they gave me the health screening and the TB, the time test and all of that, so I could start my job as a waitress. That's what most people get from Planned Parenthood, men and women. And so whether it is the bill that the president recently signed behind closed doors that says that governors have now the ability to deny federal dollars being given to family planning agencies within their states. So that just passed. He just signed that. Or at the state of Illinois with HB 40, what Governor Rauner is doing with basically lying to the American people, to the people of Illinois all that time during the campaign, saying that he was pro-choice, and now he is he's opposing HB 40. You know, this is a real issue, and so what can you do? Speak up. Don't vote for someone who is not pro-choice, or don't vote for someone who will go back on their own word. You know, he said he was choice. Now he's going back on his word. Election's coming up for governor of Illinois. And remember, governors matter because governors are the ones now under President Trump who can deny funding passed through federal dollars to Planned Parenthood. So if you're anti-choice, then you go vote for him. These are the decisions we all have to make. But at the end of the day, I think it's really short-sighted to let the discussion over choice cloud and keep us from supporting agencies that provide much needed healthcare services to people who don't get them, to underserved populations. It is a good value for our money. Another red herring with the Affordable Care Act repeal replacement, you will hear of a movement to take birth control and make it an over-the-counter item. This is a red herring. When you make birth control available over the counter without a prescription, you now have taken away the requirement for health insurance to pay for it. So you've now shifted the cost of birth control from the health insurance onto the individual woman. You just made it more expensive to be a woman. That's another red herring. So just be aware as you're hearing these discussions. So I talk to a lot of young people, and I'm like, oh, that's great. I don't have to go to the doctor to get a prescription. I'd love to be able to refill my birth control prescription. It makes sense, except that once it's over the counter, insurance won't pay for it. So you've just now put the cost. You've now basically created a woman tax.
Thank you very much. I'm going to read, again, we're to our next set of four. Shirley McCombs from Petersburg, followed by Jamie Potter, from Pontiac, and Susan Cortese from Bloomington, and Andrew Erford from Bloomington. So we'll go ahead and start with Shirley. Shirley McCombs.
Is Shirley here?
Shirley?
Are you going to ask your question, hon? Oh, okay. Shirley passes.
Shirley, I haven't seen you in a while. Thank you.
Good to see you.
Okay, so we'll go then to Jamie Potter from Pontiac.
I hope you can hear me. I'm a loud talker, so anyway, first of all, it is such an honor to meet you in person. You go, girl, and you right
there
you.
With it. Thank you, thank you.
I have several things to say, so I'm just going to try to shorthand all of them into one simple question, I am a liberal Democrat, and I live in a very conservative, bigoted area, and I have made great personal strides the last 8 years because I knew someone was representing me who cared.
Aww.
If it wasn't for, I'm referring to Barack Obama, but I have worked hard. I have had to fight for the right to be an individual more than I have had to fight to be accepted for a person with cerebral palsy, and I am tired of choosing between the two. It's like nobody sees you. Anyway, if you're in a wheelchair, I have been in situations where I have peed myself in Walmart. And you know what? I'm like, let people see. Let people smell it on me. Because I don't care. I have been for so much, and I'm not going to get into it, but I'm not normal. I don't want to be like everybody else. I don't want to have to only do Special Olympics. I don't really care about sports. I always wanted to be a hairdresser, but physically I can't do that. And people look at me and go, wow, I didn't realize you would feel that way and still be in a wheelchair. You know, what I wanted to ask you, I am terrified of losing all of the things that I have gained because of two men who believe over the power of money instead of the human decency of the American people. And what I want to ask you as an individual, how far are you willing to go to make it possible for someone like me to still exist in the next 4 years?
You're listening to 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, supported by listeners like you. This is a Sound Ideas broadcast of Senator Tammy Duckworth's town hall meeting at Illinois Wesleyan University.
Everyone here appreciates that you exist. Let me just... Hi, Mom.
Anyway, I just wanted to know if programs like home-based programs, Social Security, Medicaid, these are the type of things that keep people... I mean, they're already living in poverty levels. I don't understand how... I just feel like there's no heart there anymore. How can you take away from the least of, I mean, there are people I see, I am blessed that I have my son. He has taught me so many valuable life lessons. I'm a much better person now than I was 25 years ago. But I feel there's no heart anymore. There's no dignity.
No respect.
No, there's no respect. I mean, they don't really see. And they should see from you, my God. I mean, I'm so impressed by you. I really am. I'm extremely touched. Because, no.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to know about those programs, and I'm afraid for him.
Sure. Well, let me answer your question directly. I love Mom, but you asked me first, and I want to make sure that I recognize your endless. You do exist, and you have every right to exist, and you add to the quality of our society. We're a better society because you are here. This already is a better discussion because you were able to ask that question and had the courage to do it. Right? And I think people who don't support programs for those with disabilities, people who don't support coverage for healthcare, people who don't support Social Security, are living in a false sense of invincibility. Even if you come from it because you have no human emotions, and let's just say that you're a robot and you come at it with no human emotions, you are foolish to think that you're invincible. We, every one of us, just like me, are all one tragic car accident, one terrible health diagnosis, one unknown genetic condition away from needing a little bit of help ourselves. And so we are all foolish if we don't make these investments, not in him, but in ourselves and in each other. And that is why... We are the name, you know. Look, before I was wounded, I was probably the most physically fit person in any room. And because I'd been a pilot since I was in the Army, since I was in my early 20s, I'd gotten the top, most comprehensive physical screening every year. I had an EKG every year my entire career as a pilot because it was required. that all the way through. So I was physically fit. I was, you know, and it, in a blink of an eye, I found myself in a hospital bed, unable to take care of myself, unable to move a part of my body. And that's when I realized the importance of the Americans with Disabilities Act. And this happens every single day, every single hour, all across this great country. And thank God we have it. But even if you don't have the human emotions and you are that robot, it is economically feasible. It is economically the smart thing to do to support and expand programs that are support programs to allow people to live independent lives, productive lives, that they want to live in the manner that they want to live. Because it is far more costly to keep people institutionalized. It is far more costly to not give somebody the mobility equipment that they need to live their lives than it is to let them go out there and range as free as they want to range, because they will make our society better. Because you will make our society better. We're all one medical diagnosis away. So many of the gains that have been made in this country have been made because of persons with disabilities, have been made for things like the affordable, with the ADA. And in fact, there are folks who are actively trying to roll back the ADA. And there are folks who are part of this movement to diminish the importance of the ADA, one of which was just confirmed to the United States Supreme Court. Judge Neil Gorsuch, during his confirmation hearing, let me back up. The Supreme Court can announce at any time their decision on a case that's in front of the Supreme Court. They choose. So there's no time schedule when they choose. They chose to announce their decision unanimously overturning one of Judge Gorsuch's decision at a lower court level during his confirmation process.
I loved it.
They did it to send a message. And his decision, he ruled that public schools did not have the requirement to provide to the best of their ability accommodations for kids with special needs. He said that they only had to meet the bare minimum standard, as opposed to the obligation being to the best of their ability. He said bare minimum. And the United States Supreme Court unanimously ruled against him and said, no, you must meet the best of your ability. That means Clarence Thomas voted to overrule him. And Justice Roberts. And kids with special needs that they're talking about are not just kids in wheelchairs. It's kids with ADHD, kids with English as a second language, kids with any type of a special need falls under that IDEA rule. That's just one example of how they're trying to roll back and what the discussion is here, where they're trying to take away what gains we've made and make those people who have special needs or a little extra help less. I do see myself, I'm the first disabled woman elected to the United States Senate. I'm very proud of it. Thank you. I do see my job there as to be one of the flag carriers, one of the torchbearers, and I will fight for that every single day that I'm there. Because the only reason that I am able to be in the United States Senate is because folks like Mark Bristow and folks who in the disability awareness movement literally crawled up the steps, dragged themselves. If you go to YouTube and look at this fight for the ADA and watch what people did to drag themselves up the steps of the United States Capitol to show that as Americans they did not have access. And that's how we won the fight for the ADA. And because they crawled up that, you know, a little under three decades ago, I will crawl up those steps again if I have to.
Susan Cortese from Bloomington. Susan?
Hi, I'm a 35-year veteran public school teacher. I spent the first part of my career in a small rural school, and then I moved to a very large metropolitan wealthy school, and I spent the last 23 years here in Bloomington at a high school where we had 50% free and reduced lunch students. It scares me so much that they have put in place to make regulations on a job that I love and know so well, a woman who knows nothing about what I do day to day, or I did day to day. I can tell you, we didn't have a breakfast program when I first started teaching, and the difference that it made in my students when they got breakfast in the morning. Our nurse at our school said, I don't see stomach aches and headaches as much as I used to see in the nurse's office. But to think that they're going to give money to students in a voucher system to go to other schools frightens me. I think that if we do that, we are condemning small public schools, large public schools, to a worse fate than we are in right now. And I need to know that we can do something about this, because students who need special help and special needs and special programming aren't going to get the money that they need. And this kind of thing is going to make jobs of teachers so much harder, and we can't go there.
Thank you. And it will gut the strength of our nation. It will gut our nation. I'm not opposed to charter schools, but I absolutely oppose vouchers programs that take money out of public schools in order to provide vouchers to people to go to private schools. And here's a problem. These programs gut the public school system, but also creates haves and have-nots among our kids, because you have to be lucky enough to win the lottery to get into a charter school so you can use the voucher. What about all the other kids who don't happen to win the lottery? What happens if you live in a part of the country or Illinois where there's not a lot of charter schools? Then the money is put out of the school system and it's going to someone else, and our kids in areas without those schools, the system just degrades. Look, I was on school lunch and school breakfast in high school. I went to a school where over 60% of the kids were on a reduced lunch and breakfast program. There were days, because my dad had lost his job and was unemployed for about 6 years, there were days that those were the only meals I ate. I fainted in class once because I didn't have enough to eat by the end of the day. I had a high school English teacher who was our yearbook supervisor that in my 16-year-old mind I knew was incompetent. Along with all of my buddies in my class, we all knew that he was incompetent because he kept messing up our assignments during the school day. And he would keep us after school towards the end of the month. He'd keep us after school and say, you got to redo this assignment. You got to redo the layout for the yearbook. You got to redo your English assignment. Stay after class. Stay after school. Come back. We'll do it. And he did this like 2 or 3 times a week. And we were like, man, we love him, but he needs to get his, you know, act together and tell us exactly what he needs to do so we do it right the first time. But he'd keep us after school so long that he'd be like, guys, I'm sorry I kept you late. Before you go home, here's $10. Why don't you go down to Taco Bell, buy some tacos, eat something before you go home. I kept you here through dinner time. I'm so sorry I kept you late. 2 or 3 nights a week, this public school teacher was reaching in his pocket because he knew which kids in his class were hungry, and he knew which of us were going to go home and not get dinner that night because there was nothing left. If it wasn't for him, I would never have graduated high school, because I would have dropped out and gone. I already worked after school, one job. I would have gone a second job. My family needed me to go to work, you know? And I wouldn't be in front of you here today if it were not for him. So I will oppose the taking money out of public schools. I don't philosophically have a problem against charter schools. They just can't succeed at the expense of the kids who have no other options.
Andrew Erfer from Bloomington. Andrew?
Hi, Andrew.
First of all, Senator Duckworth, veteran to veteran, thank you for your service.
What
and
branch?
I couldn't be more proud of you and Senator Durbin as a resident of Illinois. I've always been happy with Senator Durbin, and I was so happy. It was like the one bright spot a few months ago. It's when you won in Illinois, so thank you.
Thank you. What branch?
Army.
Cool.
My question, if I can ask you more, ask you as a liberal, Democrat, progressive, and not really senator per se. I was really disheartened because President Trump won, but we've seen so much energy since then to try to like push back and deal with all these things everybody's been talking about. But the candidate in Kansas the other day, Thompson, the Democratic Party didn't support him, and I'm only afraid of two things: 2018 in 2020, and I was wondering like what you're going to do or what you want to do to try to make sure that we reach out to people maybe to the left of the party and actually support them.
I mean, there are certain things I'm already doing. I on the campaign side of things, are certainly working hard for the 2018ers. What I would do and what I ask each of you to do is to please remain engaged. President Trump, yes, he did not win with a majority of the popular vote, but there were a large number of Americans who voted for him. And those Americans, I would hope, are starting to see that he has broken just about every promise he made to them on the campaign trail. He was going to drain the swamp. He did not drain the swamp. He put the biggest swamp dwellers into cabinet positions. He put incompetent people into their positions. Even something like, he promised he would separate himself from his business dealings. He did not do that. He said he would build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. He did not. He's actually putting it into the budget for, and we're probably going to, April 29th is the president's 100th day in office. It is also when we may have government shutdown, which will hurt Americans all across this country, partially because he wants to put the building of the wall on the people's credit card. It's in the continuing resolution, is a proposed thing where they're going to build the cost of building the wall with no pay for it, so it's going to be on the backs of taxpayers. So I would hope that people who did vote for him start to see that he has not kept his promises. But we also have to reach out to those folks and say, what is going on that in your lives and that discussion of finding common ground? On the other hand, I want to work as hard as I can to make sure the progressive voices win these elections, the progressive voices that represent the people win these elections. And it starts with, I think we need public funding of political campaigns. Get the money out of politics. Get it out. We need to overturn Citizens United, and I will work for that. We need, and this is not always popular, we need third party, this is Tammy Duckworth's personal opinion, we need third party drawing of district boundaries. And yes, in Illinois they're gerrymandered to the benefit of Democrats, but in most of the country, they're gerrymandered towards the benefit of very conservative Republicans, that the people in their own districts, many of them are not represented because they're gerrymandered out of having a voice. And so we have to work at every single level from school board trustees, all the way, library board of trustees, all the way through to President of the United States, to governor, to all of those offices. So I will work as much as I can, and I'm working also in partnership with my colleagues who are to my left on some issues, but I'm working with on some tax reform legislation right now with Elizabeth Warren. I'm co-sponsoring a bill with her for Social Security, to save Social Security. There's a tax loophole out there right now. You guys are gonna love this one. Last year, we did not give people on Social Security and Social Security disability a cost of living adjustment because the cost of living calculation for what it costs to live, that formula is based on the price of gas, not the price of prescription medication or the price of food, but the price of gas. And yet people on Social Security and Social Security disability are least likely to be driving, but they're more likely to be buying medicine and food. And because of that, they did not get a little pay increase last year, cost of living adjustment. There's a tax loophole out there right now that says the corporations that give bonuses, year-end bonuses to their workers, get to write that bonus off as a tax, as a business expense, and don't pay taxes on it. The workers who receive these bonuses, on average, the average income of a worker receiving this bonus is $1.6 million. So that, and sometimes the bonuses that they get are in the tens of millions, and their salaries are only 1.6, but they get a $10 million bonus. They may have deserved that bonus. They may have worked very, very hard and made a ton of money for their company and deserved that bonus. My position is that bonus should not be written off as a tax expense for the corporations and put on the backs of taxpayers. They should pay taxes on it. Go ahead and give the bonus, just pay the taxes. If you close that one tax loophole, we would recover enough money to give every single person on Social Security and Social Security disability a little over $500, equivalent to a year's worth of cost of living adjustment. And that's the bill I'm working with Elizabeth Warren on. And you'll see me out there. You can talk to the campaign side. You'll see me out campaigning on the campaign side. This is about the heart and soul of our country. This is about who we are as a nation. I'm not done fighting yet. I'm just starting. And I think many of you are as well.
Thanks for listening to a special Sound Ideas broadcast of U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth's town hall meeting at Illinois Wesleyan University. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is WGLT Normal, made possible by listener contributions at WGLT.org.